come up with an answer yet. Like, there are 4 minutes for rebuttal.
The East Central District, rising branch of the county, ruled that payments made directly to Mastery as signer under assignment, rather than joint checks, is not a significant distinction under the state statute and the UCC regarding assignment. The appeals court also relied upon a contract provision to support its position that direct payment for labor was not a violation of the state assignment law or of the and was permitted under the contract provision. We have to first examine the pertinent section of the state assignment law that's in question here, 1309.37C, which specifically provides that when there is valid notice of assignment to a payor, in this case the contractor Rockaway, the payor may, or the debtor may continue making payments to the assignor, in this case the subcontractor Mastery, until the account debtor, Rockaway, receives notification that the amount due or to become due has been assigned and that payment is to be made to the assignee, SED. The lower courts in this state have laid out a solid body of assignment law that is in compliance with the UCC treatment and holdings in other states. Quite simply, in compliance with the state statute, if a payor or a debtor receives valid notice, a direction to pay the assignee rather than the assignor, and identification of the rights to be assigned, the contractor payor must follow that assignment. The elements to be followed were set out in the surety savings case by this court in 1978. That was explained in the Southern Florida Bank case that once valid notice of the assignment is made, the payor, or in this case, Rockaway, is required to make the payments to the assignee. And as the Court of Appeals, the 12th District ruled in the Dimmitt and Owens case, if you have valid notice of the assignment and you ignore that assignment, you are at risk for double payment. This is a case, apparently, of first impression regarding if there are variables which can opt the payor or the creditor out from following the assignment once he has valid notice of assignment.
Did the bank refuse, as you know, the appellee argues that the bank refused to accept an arrangement under which there would be a check written that would cover all the parties, Mastery and Mastery suppliers and the bank?
The record in the transcript demonstrates that the bank refused to consent or sign off on multiple payments that would incur, on a check that included three parties, that include Mastery, the assignor, the bank as the assignee, and any labor, material, and or third parties that were entitled to payment as suppliers or material to the subcontractor Mastery.
Do we know why the bank refused that arrangement?
The record is not clear on that. I don't remember any testimony from the record to point to that, but the bank did not contest that trial, and the record demonstrates that when the payor, in this case, Rockaway Partners, the general contractor, made payments directly to Mastery and the labor or the material, the bank did not object because that seemed to comply, if not strictly with the assignment statute and the assignment law, at least with Article 10 under the contract.
Is it your contention? Excuse me.
Go ahead,
Francis.
Go ahead. Didn't the contract call for this type of payment?
Yes, it did. Article 10 of the book, because there are actually two contracts here, because we're talking about the construction of two separate Lowe's building centers here in Franklin County. Article 10 of the contract did contain language that if the contractor learned that the subcontractor failed to pay and claims were being made by laborers, then the contractor, in this case, again, Rossovic, could pay directly to those contractors.
He had a right to do that, right?
They had a right to do that under the contract. But
now, does the bank get any greater rights than the subcontractor?
No, clearly the bank, as the assignee, has only those rights that Mastery had.
Well, then the contractor was only doing that which they had provided for in the contract.
Except they did it imprecisely. They did it incorrectly. In this case, the record...
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean incorrectly?
Well,
first of all, could they do it? Is there a correct way to do it?
There is a correct way to do it. Ronald Reagan Partners did not do it the proper way.
They did it the wrong way.
They did it incorrectly.
What was the right way?
The right way to do it, as set forth in the contract language and as set forth in a separate statute, 1311.15, the bank would have to either make the payments, or excuse me, I'm saying wrong there. The contractor, Roosevelt, would either have to make the payments directly to the laborers or directly to the material.
But there's no question that these payments that were made went to the laborer.
I think there is a question, and I think that the...
From what I read, there wasn't.
Well, that's the contention of Roosevelt. The question becomes...
Do you have any proof that went anywhere else?
No. There's nothing in the record.
So,
there was nothing in the evidence that Roosevelt did go anywhere else.
And you just conjecture.
But the problem is we're undermining the sign of law. The real principle to be held here is that once there is notice, an SAB, in this case the bank, has to be able to rely upon those contracts, and the contracts are going to be honored.
Okay, get back to the right way to do it.
The proper way to do it would be either for the payor, in this case, Roosevelt and Partners, to pay the check directly to the laborer, the materialman, or the supplier, or to Mastery, or to First Bank of Marietta, and that payor, and cause the check to be delivered. That's not what happened here. The assignor, Mastery, the subcontractor, was making payments to its laborers and then submitting bills or invoices or some type of certification back to the contractor for reimbursement. At that point then, Roosevelt and Partners would cut checks directly to Mastery. There was no way to track or to ensure or to be certain that the assignment was being honored, first because the assignment was not being honored, but more importantly, there was no way to track or to be certain that payments were being made to the third party, materialman or labor.
So then you're saying that they could do this, they just did it the wrong way.
That's exactly correct.
And were you damaged by that?
Potentially. And that's the matter that has to be determined here. Clearly, First Bank of Marietta was damaged to the amount of $159,972.22. Those are the checks that were clearly established, six separate checks, from July through September of 1994, that were made directly to Mastery. There's no way to determine where those payments went. As far as we know, Mastery could have used those checks to pay its other materialmen, its other laborers on other jobs. It could have used those checks and those monies to pay its just general overhead. We have to go back and remember.
And it could have gone to the laborers.
It could have gone to the laborers.
That's the question I wanted to ask, because that's where the case turns for me. You know, we recognize your argument about Asinor and Asinine, and we recognize about the general contractor and the subcontractor, and so I understand all that.
Yes.
But on page 18 of the brief of your opponent, they say Mascrete's president, Van Olden, testified without hesitation that every dime from Roosevelt to pay Mascrete's labor was, in fact, used to pay labor. It seems to me, having done some of this work when I was in practice, that that's pretty tightly stated. It doesn't say that every dime that went from, the president said that every dime that came to them was used to pay labor. It says every dime from Roosevelt to pay the labor was in fact used. Do you make the distinction there? I guess what I really want to know is, was there anything over and above what was used to pay labor that went into the sub's pocket?
There is no way of knowing that, because by the time this matter reached trial in front of Judge Schubert, all of the records, all of the backup documents had been shredded or destroyed in some fashion by Mascrete and by Mr. Van Olenhausen. The only thing that was there was Mr. Van Olenhausen's unsupported testimony. But again, the problem is, by the Court of Appeals ruling, and if this court doesn't reverse and overturn that ruling, we have now created a judicial exception to the plain and solid law regarding assignments. If we have an exception for labor, then it's going to be very easy for a contractor or a creditor and the debtor assignor to get around that assignment by saying, well, make these payments either directly to me, and I will represent that it's being used for labor, and you can rely on me and you can trust me to do that. There's no way to follow through and assure that those payments are actually going to labor.
Isn't that the purpose? Isn't that the entire purpose behind an assignment, is to get control of the ability to make the payments? That's why the bank, that's why an assignment is out there, isn't it? So you don't have to rely on their records of who they paid.
That's correct. But in this case, the assignment is to the bank. So the bank can be the one to oversee and make sure, A,
right,
that your laborers are being paid, the project is not being completed improperly, but more importantly, I, as the bank, as the lender with a secured interest in this transaction, have the ability to make sure that I'm getting paid. You have to remember, this was not a net assignment. This was not an assignment subject to payment for overhead, payment for labor, payment for materials. This was a gross assignment of all receivables or all monies due and payable from Roslovic to Mass Street as a subcontractor and as the outside New York. There is a provision both in the contracts between Roslovic as the general contractor and the subcontractor. There's also a provision under Revised Code Section 1311.15b for Roslovic, as in this case the general contractor, or in another case for the project owner, to assure that material and laborers are being paid. We shouldn't be carving out exceptions to clear and solid law by judicial act. If Roslovic had followed the proper statutory procedures, if Roslovic had followed the proper contract procedures and made those payments directly to Mass Street's employees, Mass Street's laborers, whether they're employees or independent contractors, we wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't, and First Bank of Marietta would be out $159,900 plus.
Your argument seems to be that to us is that just apply the law as it's written, and otherwise we're going to create a situation where these cases are all going to be based on factual situations, which maybe we want to do, maybe we don't want to do. But
well, not only that, each case would have to be determined on a case-by-case basis, but we're creating a level of uncertainty to banks and finance companies and lenders as assignees under contracts. And keep in mind, these assignments take place every day in every facet of Ohio commercial transactions. Whenever commercial paper, and that's what we're really talking about here, is commercial paper passing from a borrower to a bank to make sure that there is some adequate assurance to the lender that's going to be paid. This affects agriculture. You know, if the farmer goes to the bank and says, I need money from you, Mr. Banker, to buy seed to plant my crop, and I'm going to assign you, once I sell my crop, payments from that. If banks learn that those assignments aren't worth the paper that they're written on, if banks develop the impression that exceptions are being carved out, banks are going to be much more hesitant to lend money to that farmer for him to buy seed to plant the crops. That holds true for manufacturers who need raw materials or additional equipment. Oftentimes they go to the bank or to the financial broker and say, we need money to do this expansion, to increase our enterprise here within the state of Ohio, and we will assign you products that are generated later on. If the lenders learn that in Ohio we have first carved out an exception, well, the assignment is valid but for labor, we carved out a judicial exception to that, the bank is going to be much more hesitant and willing to stem the flow of money in a commercial transaction from the lender to the bank at the same time.
Were any liens filed?
The record is clear that liens were filed, but most of those liens were filed by the conduct of Roslovic. Roslovic finally got to the point where he says, I'm not paying anybody, I'm not cutting checks to anyone.
Any labor liens filed?
There were some liens filed that show in the record, but it wasn't necessarily directly from, and no liens were filed by laborers of Master.
Go back to my question a minute, if I might, Counselor. Do you have your brief, page 8?
Yes, sir.
The second full paragraph on page 8. Do you mean on the second and third lines in the second full paragraph, Asinore instead of Assinee?
I think you do. I saw that too.
Yes, sir. I think that may be.
Okay. Okay, now the reason I ask is because just paragraph just before that, you indicate that all the checks that Mass Creek made before, Rosselvik made before, were made payable to Mass Creek and to a material man, but not so with laborers.
That's correct.
So that has to be the assignor, not the assignee.
I apologize for that.
No, no, it's no problem, so long as I understand. Now, is your contention that that's the reason you had no control? You know, I understand what the law says and what the section says, but there's a provision in the contract that says the general can pay labor and material.
Correct. But the contract, in compliance with our assignment law under 13937, both track together that either the payments have to be made to both First Bank of Marietta and Mass Creek and the labor, or at least at a minimum, to Mass Creek and the labor. That way there is some way to track and to assure that the payments are going to...
And the distinction here is that they did make checks payable to suppliers jointly with the sub, but didn't with the laborers.
Yes, and those are not part of this appeal. The only thing that's included in the 159.9 that is at issue here is the checks that were made directly from Rosselvik to Mass Creek with no consideration of the assignment law or the specific language in the contract.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Busby.
Good morning. I'm Brian Busby, representing Rosselvik in this case. I guess I'm perplexed that we stand before this court still discussing what Rosselvik contends, still discussing we don't know where this money went.
Why should that make any difference? If the statute, the law is clear, why should we write an opinion that is going to create exceptions that are driven by factual situations? That, doesn't that just do what the appellant said, that it's going to create a good deal of uncertainty with the bank? I mean, regardless of all of the equities here from your brief, you obviously think that this is not a fair deal or whatever, but you know, here we've got contracts and we've got stats, we've got law that says what happens and what should happen.
Now, I guess, Your Honor, where I disagree with Mr. Hall with First Bank is this concept of the law. There is no law anywhere that I know of that requires that this be done by joint check. Mr. Hall submitted that what's wrong here is the bank didn't get control. There's no law anywhere that requires that the bank have control.
Yeah, there is. That's what the assignment's all about. You know, when you get for your client the line of credit, they take the assignment of your accounts receivable.
Exactly. And they step into the shoes of Mass Creek. And I want to make four basic points.
That's right. And they didn't get the money that was paid to Mass Creek.
Because that money went to the laborers. We had a 7-day trial.
Yeah, well, let me ask you about that. Because on page 18 of your brief, are you prepared to assert the first full paragraph, sir, the second sentence? You say Mass Creek's president, Van Olenhausen,
right,
testified without hesitation that every dime from Rosselvik to pay Mass Creek's labor was in fact used to pay labor. Are you prepared to say in that sentence, Mass Creek's president, Van Olenhausen, testified without hesitation that every dime from Rosselvik to Mass Creek was used to pay labor?
Yes.
Because that's not what that sentence says. It only says every dime that was designed to go to labor was. It doesn't say that additional money wasn't paid.
The testimony in the evidence of the case and Judge Schubert's finding the facts after a 7-day trial was that every case went to the labor.
Why should the bank have to go through a 7-day trial for your client to set forth that they, although they didn't follow through with the assignment and pay to the bank, that they really did a good job anyway in accordance with the contract?
Why should we have to go through this?
Both of you.
I would agree, Your Honor. That's the problem.
Follow the assignment.
No problem. Right. What Rosselvik did subjected them to just this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risky, troublesome way of legal conceit. It would be far better if they had done joint checks, because at least that offers evidence that the money went to the third party.
They knew how to do it. They did it to the material men, the vendors.
Because as I Gibbons was addressed at the trial. That could be done. How could we do joint checks of all of these laborers? And it opened up administrative and legal questions that Rossovich wasn't prepared to deal with. The contract, you know, the four basic points to make. The contract gave Rossovich the right to do this. There's no provision in the contract that it be done a certain way. Number two, and the bank doesn't even talk about this very much, and certainly not in the oral argument. Section 1311, 15b2 of our code, under the lien law, allows a contractor to pay laborers and set that off against what that contractor owes the subcontractor. There is a separate provision in Ohio law that allows for this. And I might add that that statute, again, says nothing about the right way of doing it. It says nothing about how you have to do it.
Well, it doesn't. It really does. Maybe we're quarreling over paid, the language paid, because it isn't it true that the payments really went to the subcontractor rather than to the laborers? And then you want to say, but then it thereafter went to laborers.
Yes.
Okay. And it doesn't say pay laborers by way of, it, you know, there's reason for it being structured this way, isn't there, counsel? And it's to avoid this very sort of thing.
I would agree that the joint check would have been a neater way to do it. I'd certainly say that's not required by law. That's not required in the contract. That's not required by 1311.15. It says we can pay the laborers. It doesn't
Well,
it doesn't address the means by which you have to do that.
But what you're saying is it's not significant. The language of that statute is not significant in terms of saying paid laborers. That's not what it means. It means some any old way. But one could argue it means directly pay laborers.
Well, you could argue that.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't say that.
There'd be reason for that, wouldn't there? Wouldn't there be a reason for that? So that there'd be records that it only went to the laborers and that you didn't have this intermediary who could be dishonest.
Could be.
It does happen in that industry.
Let me point this out again in terms of the trial and what happened there. You have to understand Mr. Oldhausen was their witness. They called him on direct to prove these things. Mr. Oldhausen was also presenting $250,000 in extra claims for extra work he said happened on the project at the same time. They called Mr. Oldhausen. It was their burden of proof. I don't know anything about this concept of the records being destroyed, Maastricht's records being destroyed, but that certainly wasn't Rossovich's fault. And I don't think that should be held against us.
Well, it is.
Mr. Oldhausen, my law system, Jim, had every motivation to say that Maastricht got this money and kept it, because if he had said that, it could have opened up the potential for a judgment against Rossovich that would have in effect paid off Mr. Oldhausen's loan. So he had every reason to claim, if it was true, that he kept the money. But he did. He testified honestly that all this money went to the laborers.
But if you accept the way you wanted to write the law, instead of a good, clean assignment, which easily tracks the payment to the maximum to laborers, a bank now is going to have to go after every sub, ask to see their book, try to verify payments in fact went to the contractor who were to laborers or chairmen. You're going to be into an accounting that has time to track each individual payment to each of these groups to be sure about the right source of the bank, knowing whether or not it's had a claim to them. Really, what you're talking about is damages. And it seems to me you have created a logistical nightmare for every loan out there on the method that you want.
I can't quarrel with that in terms of the method we use.
I mean, look at what happened here. It's just a very clean check, just like it is material. We have this huge trial trying to scrap the money in, and isn't that going to add a huge amount of burden to the business on hires?
Well, I don't think so. I mean,
you had no guarantee. You had no guarantee that the bank would spend the money the way they did.
And that's what Rossovich, or that's what the bank said. And one of your honors put a question about this in terms of, you know, what what First Bank is really claiming, and it's page 8 of their brief, and I think somebody referred to it, and they say there, First Bank admits that contract laws allow Rossman to make payments on the claims for labor.
That's wrong there.
Okay, but it said in all other instances, talking about the other instances, Rossman made joint checks payable to Mass Street and the third party to ensure that payment reached the vendors or material. The concept of the joint check, there's no magic in that. The issue, as the bank admits, is to ensure that payment reached the vendors or material.
There's no. You have your key witness from the key testifying. I paid everybody. Darn it, all my records were destroyed, so you can't bring
them. That's not my fault. That's the problem Rossman faced in court because they had to show that was the problem. They had to show, and the bank called this witness who said all of it went to labor. So we pulled
all the ex records destroyed that the bank could profit better.
Again, what can I say? I mean, I'm not master. We didn't control master. We didn't control the
animal. That's why the law, and you don't want to create a
again, we keep talking about the law. There's no law that I know of that requires a joint check. The law is, as First Bank admits, to ensure that the payment goes to these third parties. If you do a third party check, take what's happening. We do a third party check to Mass Street and Sandy Sub. We give that check to Mass Street. There's no guarantee that money goes to Sandy Sub. Mass Street, they call Sandy Sub in, and for other reasons, say, here, endorse this check, because I've got to keep this money. There's no guarantee it went to Sandy Sub. You've got the same problem. Here, we gave the money to Mass Street so that they could give it to the laborers. All the evidence, all the proof, all the testimony in this case is it went to the laborers.
Well, that sounds good, but that isn't the way it works. I mean, you have a way to protect yourself as a general contractor. When you get the release, the waiver from the sub, you demand from the sub that there be a waiver from the workman and materialman. And I used to always trace it all the way through. Now, so there's a way to protect that. But on the very issue that we're talking about, you said that Judge Sheward made a specific finding that all of this money went to laborers. Can you show me in his opinion where that says that? Is it? He just issued the one opinion, didn't he, as well as the journal entry?
The decision issued July 11th of 1997. It should be in the
record. That's it. Okay, it's on page 2 of his decision, about 5 lines from the bottom. Because I thought it was kind of interesting how he worded it, too. And Mascrete specifically gave Rossovic the right to pay Mascrete's subcontractors, suppliers, and laborers on these projects, which rights were probably exercised by Rossovic. Rossovic did not violate the terms of the assignment from Mascrete to the bank, and that Rossovic, given its payment to Mascrete's subcontractors, suppliers, and laborers, and other credits and set-offs, and so on. Now, that doesn't say that all the money was used to pay the laborers. Just says that laborers were paid. I think that's got to be the contention. Was there an amount over and above the amount that was required to pay the laborers? If so, then maybe you have an argument, or he has an argument. If not,
that begins what was addressed at trial. We went through all the payments, what went to the laborers. We spent days charting all of that out. Rossovic agreed, and this is what the assignment provides. If we owed money above that to First Bank, we would have paid that to First Bank under the assignment. The accounting came out at trial that we didn't. In fact, it came out at trial that we had overpaid, that we had paid Mastery more than what we were required to pay under the contract.
Yeah, but at trial, you couldn't prove that the laborers were actually paid with that money, other than that testimony that.
Well,
fudges, frankly.
There's other circumstances, of course, Your Honor, and that is that the laborers stayed on the job, the laborers worked, the laborers filed a lien.
Well, you and I both know how that works, especially in a time when it's difficult to get work. Sometimes you drag those laborers and those subs along far longer than they ought to be.
Well, I mean, if you're a laborer on the job and you're not getting paid, I don't think that you would stay.
You don't?
Let me add one final thing. Your Honor, before I close, again, the concept of the joint check, you must understand that we tried to do that. When this was put on Rosalick, and then I explained in the brief our position sort of in the middle, Mass Street was siding with First Bank, we're trying to build this project. We invited First Bank in to sit down and try to do this, to try to figure this out so that we can do it the right way. First Bank refused. And on page, the question was, you know, why did First Bank refuse? Well, Mr. Hall said, well, we don't really know. And on page 5 is the direct testimony from First Bank's president at the trial where he said, I said to him, that's Rosalick, that there was no way that I knew what was owed to a vendor, that I couldn't do that. The bank said, look, I don't know who owed this lot. I'm not going to do it. They would not sign these checks. We couldn't do it that way. Then Mr. Hall said, Rosalick's fault that liens were filed. You know, again, what happened? The bank sued us down in Marietta to enjoin us from making these payments. The Marietta court denied that, but because we've been sued, we had to stop. And we figured we can't go forward in light of a lawsuit, which required that we file a lawsuit to determine, to allow the court to determine where this money should go. And that was the issue before Judge Shure. So even if a joint check was required, which again, I would say I don't see that requirement anywhere in the law of assignment, anywhere in this contract, anywhere 1311.15b2. What is required is to be able to show that this money went properly to the third party.
Well, doesn't B2 also require the filing of a claim, serving notice pursuant to 1311.05 and so forth? You seem to indicate in your brief that the term claim is some very sort of general, generic kind of term that can mean anything, but is that really what you think the statute means?
Again, Your Honor, the same thing. Claim isn't defined anywhere. How is this any different from the claim of one of the other subs that, hey, we need to be paid, this guy owes us X amount of dollars? There's no requirement, you know, that it be in writing. I mean, how is Rosalick on a day-to-day basis supposed to be able to determine what is and is not a claim in order to trigger this statute? They had the company coming to them and saying, we need this money to pay our laborers. I think under the law that that's a claim. And Your Honors, I would close simply by saying Judge Shure heard this case for 7 days, and I appreciate it's a burden for all. I ask for your First Bank and us, but nevertheless, the evidence of this case was that this money went to the laborers. That's been affirmed by the Court of Appeals. I don't believe on this record there is any basis factually for overturning that crucial decision. And once done, I think the decision needs to be affirmed for Rosalick. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Busby. Mr. Hall, you've used your time, which you may take 30 seconds.
One of the only points that I want to make is that Rosalick and First Bank of Marietta both agree there is no requirement for joint checks. But as Justice Cook pointed out, 1311.15 says a principal contractor may pay directly the claim. By paying directly the claim to the laborer, there is assurance that the payments are going where they're supposed to be going. I think that same understanding can be read as Article 10 of the contract. And more importantly, the other option is to pay directly to the assignee because, as you pointed out, the assignee takes no greater rights than the ministry, the subcontractor, has the assignor, so it'll be the assignee's responsibility, not fully the labor.
So, and the general pay directly to the laborers would be no loss.
That is correct, Your Honor. Because
and have they done that? Where would the dollars be different from that between all the people who accept it?
Had they done that, the bank, that the assignee, First Bank Marietta, would be assured that the money's went where it was intended to go, which was to pay labor. That is the question that's open.
Or bear the risk.
Right. I'm asking this court to affirm the decision of Demington Owens, audiovisual, and say that if you pay, at its proper notice of assignment, you do so at your own risk and you're subject to double payment.
So I understand the dollars would reside any differently than they do today.
They may, and that's a question that is undetermined.
Well, the question is, the only thing that we don't like,
the statute is clear. It's as clear as it can be. We used to do it all the time.
Assume that the $159,900 is a question when the record is paid later. The court is not finding that. The court, Judge Stewart and the appeals court found that there is an exception here because there was no
subcontractor to operate his business.
That
took an assignment.
And
the job is to get the money back. Sure,
you have notice of assignment.
Which the subcontractor is paying.
The labor of the subcontractor.
Was there any proof that the money went to anyone other than the labor?
The only evidence adduced at trial was the testimony of Mr. Van Lennep. His testimony was, I got it, it was a reimbursement, and I distributed it to laborers.
So the only testimony is the money went to laborers.
In this record, that's correct.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the truth we have. It doesn't make any difference with the statute. The statute says this is the way you do it.
There's no way to determine that the guarantees that we've been talking about have been followed.
You want us to presume the evidence did not.
No, Your Honor. What I'm suggesting, I'm sure this court hears this argument all the time, hard facts make bad law. In this case, the hard fact is Roslovic, through its self-serving interest to avoid cost overruns, to avoid penalties for construction delays, elected to ignore the assignment, elected to not pay the money directly to the laborer, elected to not pay the money to the assignee, who takes only subject to the right of the assignor, and bypass that whole process and pay the money to Mastery without having any guarantee. By doing that, they've increased their profits by knowing that the job's going to get done in a timely fashion, or hoping that the job will be done in a timely fashion, and knowing that they don't have to bring in another contractor, as Mr. Busby's claim in his brief, at a cost overrun of 30-40%. It was a knowing decision to ignore the assignment law. When you do that in this state, you should be at risk of making double payment. I'm asking this court to overturn the decision of the 10th District of Appeals, affirm the principle set forth in the Owens case, and order the payment of the $159,972.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.